One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I want to tell you about the thylacine, often known as the Tasmanian tiger, which was an animal that was sadly driven to extinction less than 100 years ago. As we talked about the extinction of the dodo in the last full-length episode, I thought it might be interesting to follow that up with another historical extinction, this one taking place, sadly, right here in Australia, and specifically on the island of Tasmania to Australia's southeast. The thylacine, in case you're unfamiliar with it, was a carnivorous marsupial, marsupials being mammals who raise their young in a pouch. Australia in particular is full of marsupials. They're also found in other places, Indonesia and the Americas, but most famously associated with Australia, you know, kangaroos, koalas. And despite being referred to as the Tasmanian tiger, the thylacine was actually a bit more like a largish dog or a wolf. The reason that it was called a tiger is because it had tiger-like stripes along its hindquarters, but it definitely wasn't a cat. It wasn't a big cat. Thylacines were about 60 centimeters tall at the shoulder. They're over a meter long along the body, with a tail that was half that again. Great big long tails they had. They weren't very quick. They weren't very quick runners. Interestingly, when they did try to run quick, they ended up kind of hopping, a bit like a kangaroo. Another fellow marsupial. And they're thought to be solitary ambush predators who were mainly nocturnal. As we'll talk about once we get into this episode fully, we don't necessarily have the fullest understanding of much of their behaviour and their things that they did and how they lived their lives, because again we drove them to extinction before we could study them properly. Although we have got a much better idea about the thylacine as compared to the dodo, because it went extinct a lot more recently. So I guess we're able to gather more reliable information on them. But one final thylacine fact here before we get into the history of their extinction is the fact that the thylacine could, this is unbelievable, they could open their mouths really, really wide, like crazy wide. There are pictures online of just how wide they could open their jaws. It's kind of scary. 80 degrees. It's very unsettling. Kind of like, you know, how a snake can swallow a goat whole or something like that. These pictures are scary to look at. So if you want to go and be vaguely creeped out by an extinct marsupial, go and have a look at that. Anyway, the very last thylacine tragically died in 1936 in Hobart Zoo down in Tasmania, where the species was ultimately hunted to extinction by European settlers. Honestly, the poor thylacine didn't get on too well with humans, and in fairness, not just European settlers either. Thylacines used to exist on the Australian mainland up until around 3,200 years ago, before they went extinct there. And this timeline, you know, just over 3,000 years ago, this coincides with the introduction of the dingo into the Australian ecosystem, a carnivorous canid that was at least semi-domesticated by Indigenous Australians. And so with the introduction of the dingo, the thylacine ended up in competition for food with the dingo and its human mates. And ultimately, the thylacine lost that particular battle. It died out on the mainland, as I say, just over 3,000 years ago, because the dingo was better suited to prosper in this environment it had been introduced into as a pack hunter, as an omnivore, and, of course, with the backing of human hunting companions. The dingo was able to steadily drive the thylacine to extinction on the mainland, but dingoes never made it to Tasmania, and they never teamed up with the indigenous people who lived there, And so thylacine survived on the island until, that is, European settlers began to arrive, posing an existential threat to the thylacine as they began to clear land and establish farms. Now, I will say this as we begin the story of the final extinction of the thylacine on the island of Tasmania. I will say this. The thylacine as a species wasn't in a very good way in the mid-19th century. There are only a few thousand of them, only maybe 5,000 members of the species or so, and they weren't a particularly genetically diverse bunch, again, due to their small numbers and the fact that they'd sort of been isolated on this island. So driving them to extinction was not a very difficult task for the European settlers, and it's a task that they completed with a level of efficiency very similar to the one seen with the eradication of the dodo. They really gave the thylacine the business. Thylacines were, generally speaking, only very rarely sighted by settlers in Tasmania, or Van Diemen's Land, as it was known back then. And as I say, because they're thought to have been solitary ambush predators, mainly active at night, they didn't really come into contact with people all that much to begin with. They kept themselves to themselves for the most part, avoiding any interaction with humans as much as they could. But this didn't remain an option for the thylacine as time continued, because before very long, more and more settlers arrived in Tasmania, more and more bush was cleared to make way for farms, and so humans and thylacines came into contact more and more often. Thylacines were said to prey upon the livestock of these farmers, sheep, cattle, chickens, and so were scapegoated, or I guess scape-thylacined, for stock losses up and down the island. And look, while the odd thylacine probably did have, you know, the odd winner-winner chicken dinner here and there, they copped a lot of undeserved blame for farmers losing their animals. Because for one, these days it's thought that feral dogs and other introduced species were probably much more responsible for these stock losses to a much greater extent, right, than the poor old thylacine. But that, nonetheless, the thylacine was burdened with an increasingly negative reputation, not only as a cunning thief of chooks and sheep in the night, but also as a vicious and aggressive predator. Tasmanian settlers grew ever more afraid of the thylacine, and like the dodo, this species lacked a PR department to try to maintain, you know, positive brand awareness. Think of the wolf, right? Think of the wolf these days and how it's generally perceived. It is a cold-blooded, merciless killer, right, that enjoys going after livestock, killing for sport, dressing up as old ladies and eating their grandchildren, and testing the structural integrity of porcine-built dwellings. But of course, in truth, the wolf does none of these things. In reality, wolves are generally afraid of humans. They certainly don't hunt us. In the last century, just to put things in perspective for you here, in the last 100 years, the total number of people killed by wolves in North America is 2. Not 2,000, not 200, 2. 2 people in 100 years, while bears in North America have killed more than 50 in the last 25. But we don't revile them as fearsome, vicious killers. It is honestly just a branding problem. And the thylacine, just like the wolf, suffered a very similar set of issues in the way that it was perceived and feared by the settlers of Tasmania. So much so, in fact, that as early as 1830, the Vandemonian colonial authorities started to pay out bounties for the skins of thylacines. An enterprising hunter could bag themselves £1 per adult and 10 shillings per pup, or joey, I guess, right, if it's marsupial. And with such riches on offer, hunters went off and very enthusiastically killed thousands of thylacines. And as there were only 5,000 or so to begin with, this was absolutely catastrophic for the species numbers. But this wasn't the only factor in the eventual extinction of the thylacine. No, no. Hunting did play a huge role in the thylacine's ultimate fate. But remember before how I said the species lacked a lot of genetic diversity? Well, this too was an important part of the fact that thylacines ultimately went extinct. Because the foreign diseases that were introduced by settlers and their animals, they also ravaged the thylacine population, killing thousands more of the poor buggers over the years. And with a lack of genetic diversity, it meant that if there was a susceptibility that, you know, one thylacine had to a certain foreign disease, good chance that a broad percentage of the rest of the population would. We've seen this with introduced diseases all over the world, and not just with animals. You look at diseases like smallpox being introduced to the Americas and other areas where people have never been exposed to it. And it's devastating for local populations that don't have any sort of resistance or genetic defences against diseases like that have been built up over time. And all of this, of course, is compounded by the continued clearance and destruction of the thylacine's habitat as more and more of Tasmania was colonised by settlers. But, of course, it only got worse from there as we move into the 20th century, because thylacines became even more vanishingly rare in the 1900s. But despite this, their reputation amongst Tasmanians only became more negative. And this was due to things like, for instance, a very famous, or infamous, I should say, photograph of a thylacine that was published far and wide in 1921. You can go online, you can find this picture, you'll understand what I'm talking about here. The picture represents a thylacine standing as brazen as you'd like, holding what is unmistakably a dead chook in its jaws. This impudent thief, this murderous scoundrel killing innocent chickens for its dinner, that is our job, thank you very much. This little bastard's coming along and ruining our chicken tonight. For those that don't know, Chicken Tonight is a brand of simmer sauces that you can get at the supermarket. And my very favourite thing about Chicken Tonight is that many of the jars proudly proclaim suitable for vegetarians on the side. Good to know. Thanks, Chicken Tonight. You can imagine vegetarians looking at a product called Chicken Tonight and wondering to themselves, is this the sort of thing that would be suitable for me? Although then again, I don't know. I guess vegetarians can just guzzle the sauce from the jar without adding the chicken. Anyway, this photograph, right? It clearly shows a wicked thylacine with a pilfered chicken, and was one of the more famous pieces of evidence used to demonstrate the evil and bloodthirsty nature of these detestable beasts that these hunters were very nobly going out and eradicating. Except the photo was taken of a captive thylacine that was about to eat the chicken that had been provided to it by its captors. This photo was deliberately cropped to hide the captive nature of the thylacine, and some people have even proposed that the photo was staged or altered for the specific purpose to demonize these poor animals even further. Whatever the case, though, it worked. People were more convinced than ever about the thylacine, despite them becoming impossibly rare in the wild by the 1920s. In fact, they were so rare that live specimens became extremely highly prized by zoos. They were shipped off all over the world, further contributing to the species' declining numbers. Even when sent off as breeding pairs, thylacines very rarely bred in captivity, and so they ended up being little more than short-lived novelties for visitors to foreign zoos. The last thylacine to be killed in the wild was shot by a farmer named Wilf Batty, based on the very wide smile on the bloke's face in the photo taken of him and the dead thylacine. You'd think Batty firmly believed that thylacines were just as bad as everyone thought. Little did he know, however, that he was the killer of the last known thylacine in the wild. I wonder how much he'd be smiling if he found that out. Probably just as widely, to be honest, because, you know, now his livestock is well and truly safe from these menacing beasts. I'm sure he'd be very happy to find out that they were extinct. Anyway, there were scattered reports of thylacine sightings over the next few years, but the very last confirmed thylacine to have existed, the very last of its species, as far as we know, known as an endling, it was in captivity in Hobart Zoo in 1936. Now, this poor animal, quite aside from being the last known member of its species, was not particularly well cared for in the zoo, and in the end, it died on the 7th of September 1936. And that was the end of the thylacine, with the species going extinct as the very last of their number died in its cage, more alone than you or I could possibly conceive of. But don't worry, because 2 months before this, the Tasmanian government announced the official protection of the thylacine as a species, and since then, not a single thylacine has been shot or hunted or captured or anything else. because not a single thylacine existed for us to do any of these things to. The thylacine was officially declared extinct in 1986, as requirements at the time mandated a minimum of 50 years from the last recorded sighting of an animal for it to be pronounced as extinct officially. But they were long gone, a long time before 1986. Another species that we tragically, thoughtlessly, and needlessly drove to extinction. Although, not everyone is convinced that we did. Well into the 20th century, people claimed to have spotted thylacines in the wild across Tasmania, and because of these continued alleged sightings, in the late 60s and early 70s, scientists, researchers, and zoologists undertook an enormous in-depth search of the island for any evidence whatsoever that thylacines had survived and were living deep in the Tasmanian wilderness. Now, it's not impossible. There are some truly remote and impenetrable parts of Tasmania, particularly on the western side of the island, and so it is at least conceivable that thylacines are still there somewhere deep in the forests. But if they are, they've hidden themselves extremely well. Very wise, you would think, if that's the case, but it probably isn't. It probably is not the case. The thylacine is very probably just extinct and has been for decades. Not a scrap of credible evidence for its continued existence has ever surfaced, even with hundreds of claimed sightings, and not just in Tasmania either. There have been sightings reported in Victoria across Bass Strait and even all the way over to the other side of the country in WA. But in spite of the hefty rewards that have been offered for anyone who can prove it's still around, seven-figure sums in some instances, these rewards have never been claimed, and as I say, no evidence has been forthcoming that these animals are still with us today. The thylacine is extinct, and until they figure out how to clone it, the only place you'll find it in Tasmania these days is on their number plates and their coat of arms, which also has the motto Ubertas et Fidelitas, which is Latin for fertility and faithfulness, which is very appropriate, I think, considering what the rest of Australia tends to say about Tasmania behind them. Oh, bugger. Oh, man, come on. I almost got through a whole episode about Tasmania without ragging on Tasmanians. Oh, so close.